Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of
Cool Down.
I don't know how good this
should be called Transfer Deadline Cool Down Edition or something like that, you know, Cool Down Transfer
Edition.
You're getting your radio voice out, yeah.
Hey, man, I'm down practicing, edition, man. Yeah, all of it, bro. You know, actually when I was in varsity, people used to say that I sound like Mo Flava. So I don't know. Maybe I could double up as Mo Flava standard on Metro FM.
I don't know. Is that a good thing or a bad thing to be compared to someone else? I don't know.
It depends what the reason's for, right?
If they're saying it's
because of the voice, it's good. But if they're saying you must get out of the in front of the camera, it's a problem.
Can we get rid of the technicalities before the show starts here, Claudia?
There we go. I'm sorting them out now.
Don't mistake me for a Man United fan, my man. I know the background. It's a little bit confusing today, but do not ever make that mistake, please, Chief.
I think it's only fair to have that picture in your background, man. The Premier League's biggest player is back, so I think it's fitting that we have him on the show watching us.
Yeah, do you guys want to open up with that one, or do you want to just because we've got two sections here today? To everyone who's watching, we're going to cover obviously the transfer deadline day, and we're going to discuss the past weekend's results. So. I'm going to throw this to you guys. Do you want to first discuss this transfer, Ronaldo, or do we want to talk about the results?
Will we finish if we start with Ronaldo? Will we finish?
Let's get results first.
All right. That's what we're doing. Results first. There we go.
One guy's not here.
Yeah, he's not here, but it doesn't mean we can't talk. I mean, I wouldn't be here if I were him too. It's just too much of a beating, man. 20th on the log, 5-0 from City. We all predicted a hiding, but we didn't see 5-0, did we?
No.
Guys, I think all of us should just spend some time, 5 minutes every day, just checking up on one guy, seeing how he's doing, you know, where his mental state is. He mustn't go out and give it all out to those kids that he's training at his soccer academy. So let's just be there for the lad, man. He needs all of our support at this, in this testing times.
It's difficult for the guy because obviously, like you said, he's coaching kids. His mind's in football 24/7. He just doesn't get a break. And then he comes on. Yeah. So I think he was entitled to break today. I don't know what your opinion is there, Nick.
Oh, listen, I'm used to getting fives and sixes all the time. Being a Newcastle fan. So it's just another day in the life of a fan like mine. So fan like myself. But yeah, listen. It's a sort of a sad state of affairs there at Arsenal. You know, Man City, yes, a class side, but they just sort of rolled over. They didn't even show up on the day. I think, listen, I'll tell you what, I think they would have lost to anyone with that performance.
Most definitely.
Nice little background music. Is that what you think of Arsenal? Is that what you think of Arsenal? but listen, I think also it was probably the worst time you want to play Man City. I said it the other day, you know, Man City losing that first game. I think they've got two back-to-back 5-0 wins. You know, they are like a wounded animal when they do lose. So, you know, they probably will go on a bit of a run now and get a couple of wins. But being an Arteta and an Arsenal going to City, you know, it's probably the worst time to play them. You know, you would like to think they would want to play one of the lower teams in the league, one of the weaker oppositions. But even then, you know, if they play like that, you know, it just looks like they've got a plan A and no real plan B or C. And unfortunately, you know, Arteta is walking on a really, really tight rope at the moment.
Yo, you're mentioning a plan A. I couldn't even see that plan, right? Like, I don't see the players being able to execute on plan A at this point in time. And, for me, it seems like an Arsenal team, which is lacking ideas, a lot of ideas to change momentum in, football matches. And they're lacking the personnel to actually execute on those ideas. If your captain is a player like Xhaka, who has moments like that in very, very important games, I think it says a lot about the team. It says a lot about the leadership at the club. It says a lot about, you know, the players around Xhaka. Nobody, it doesn't feel as if he's getting the pressure from any of the players around him or any of the coaching staff or the management. And that's, it's a scary, scary time for that football club. I think, Nick, you probably experience, teenage footballers who defend better than, some of the defending we saw.
Yeah.
No.
I think you experienced such hardship with Newcastle.
I am used to, listen, I am used to getting hide-ins like that, especially with Steve Bruce as my manager. But no, I agree with you. You know, I think there's a lot of, you know, you get taught the basics as a youngster, you know, to defend your lines, you know, don't give the opposition space, you know, don't take risks in the box. And it just seems as though, you know, there's a lot of details that he's missing, you know, all over the park, you know, defensively. You know, I was trying to figure out what their sort of pattern of play was. You know, is it, you know, getting it out to the fullbacks and then we try and look for space in behind or look for a number 10 or a striker at feet? It just really looked like they were going through the motions and probably trying to, you know, create a situation where they were more on the side of damage control than they were trying to actually going to get something for the game. You know, listen, if they had sat in and defended the lead completely and, you know, parked the bus and had no possession, then I'd say, yeah, credit to him. You know, that's the sort of approach that he wanted to go. And a lot of teams will do that against City this year. But this is Arsenal football club, guys. They are a historic club. They're still a big club. You know,
third most successful in terms of league titles.
It's scary to think that the Super League was supposed to start in the next couple of weeks, and they were supposed to be no. But in reality, you know, and like Wonga has said in the past, they've spent money. They've spent the most out of everyone in the league. And they're delivering this. You know, if I'm an Arsenal fan, I'd be a little bit of a
I think they've spent another £20 million today.
On a right back.
So you can see the money. It's making a total £160 million for Arsenal this window.
Guys, for me, you know, when I build a team myself as a coach, and I think you guys can build your teams sort of in your head, you know, for your teams that you support, you know, I think the foundation needs to be there in the first place. First and foremost, you need a spine. And I mean, they've got no spine there. There's zero spine. You know, you question marks over the goalkeeper always. Like, they bring in a second choice goalkeeper. Is the option to maybe bring him in as probably the first choice in years to come? I don't know. Center halves, they sign in. I say it again. They sign in a player that finished in 17th last year. You can't tell me that guy's going to solidify your back four. You've got a lunatic in Xhaka. And he is a lunatic.
He's the reason why Wonga isn't here today.
Yeah, and then, you know, you've got players there that, you know, you start to think, do they really even want to be there? You know, you have a guy like...
well, that's the thing I want to ask you, gentlemen.
Make the nails that's, now, guys. They're, yeah, it's a prison. They're holding him like this, guys. He wants to leave, guys. They're holding him back. Imagine you want to leave. Guys, imagine you want to leave and they put you in a straitjacket and they say, yeah, you can't leave. You can't go to Everton, bruh.
You must stick it out.
No, but now apparently, see, the tune has changed. He can't go to Everton because they see Everton as a rival now. That's the difference. Whereas before they were going to say, let's let them. That's where the narrative is changing. And it's in, like you said, a sorry state of affairs. But what I want to ask you, gentlemen, is that you speak about, you know, their state of affairs and everything. And also, obviously, Maitland Niles is a good example. But how much of a factor has this transfer window been for Arteta managing his squad and knowing that players are unsettled, players want to leave? Obviously, you got players, Bellerin, arguably one of the leaders in the squad. It was out for a while that the player wanted to leave. I see he's made his loan move to, I think it's Real Sociedad. Real Betis. There we go. So he's made, all these players, you've got Lacazette question marks. You've got Aubameyang question marks. So how much of that has actually affected the start of the season as well as will we see a better Arsenal? They better be a better Arsenal. Otherwise, I mean, they can't sink lower, can they? But will we see something different after the transfer window? And I might as well ask you the question there, Celo.
We have to see something different, guys. It's unacceptable. We can banter Arsenal all we want, guys, but truly and honestly, guys, Arsenal is a top six team historically, and historically even a top two team. You know, a top one. You know, they've won countless titles, record amount of FA Cups, and always been in the Champions League. But it's a sorry state of affairs. You know, and I think they need to get their house in order. If the manager's not the right guy, then at some point in time, you need to pull the plug and get a manager who can galvanize this group of players, because they do have talented players. You know, you've got your Martin Odegaards, your Smith Rowe, your Sakas, you know what I mean? They just need to mold it. And I think they have made some interesting signings that I think will be good for them in the long term. That Lukonga guy looks a bit good in the midfield. Odegaard is good. But yeah, as we said, we were asking questions about, and that Tavares guy at left back was also good. We were asking questions about the Ben White signing and the Aaron Ramsdale signing. Those two are question marks because, you know, he's signing a second choice for 25 million goalkeeper, 50 million for a first choice, where Jules Koundé is probably, okay, obviously, Chelsea are still trying to negotiate, but you could have gotten a centre back, Jules Koundé's mold for about £65 million. You know, add another 15 on or £60 million. But let's see what happens to Arsenal. But we need them to be in the top 10 at least, guys.
Listen,
it's just scary, man.
If it's at the expense of us being in the top 10, they can stay where they are. I don't know. but
they must
but
go
if
fight,
I'm honest
boy.
With you, you know, like I often, you know, I'm very vocal about my manager. Because I can sort of see what's been happening, and also I just don't really like his track record. If I want to put it plainly and honestly, but I don't like, you know, questioning a manager, especially a young manager. You know, Arteta's—he's done well at City. You know, he helped Pep and those teams do so well. But then, you know, when these things start to happen and you start to win in the to lose in the fashion that you lose in, I start to question whether or not he is the right man, in the sense of actually, as you said, galvanizing the group and getting them to play for him specifically. So if you look at the characters of coaches that are at the top end of the league, you look at a Jurgen Klopp, you look at Tuchel, Solskjaer, probably debatable, and he probably went through what Arteta's going through now at some point. You know, I'm telling you right now, and I'll be very honest. If Mourinho had to go into that change room, Arsenal wouldn't be where they are, because he would demand a lot more. And I think he's more on the side of trying to implement a philosophy with players that aren't probably capable of executing that philosophy right now. So he needs.
But it's interesting, Nick. It's interesting you say that, because when he came in, what we liked about them last season was that they were set up in a certain way, that the players were listening, they were structured, they weren't going gung-ho, they were organized at the back, and it's come out this season, they just don't know what they're doing, they're in between, and maybe that's what I'm getting to, where the players, they're not sure, or half of them have their foot in the door, half of them have it out the door, so do they really want to be fighting for the team, for the manager? That none of that's there, and maybe I feel like it is quite harsh to criticize the manager, because everyone says we can't see an identity, and that's, you know, it's overt. It's there. We can't see it. But again, there's just so much shit around the club that it's not just down to this guy. And I think he's got the shit end of the stick. Yeah. And we always said this job was going to be a shit end of any stick for any person coming in willing to take it. I don't know. Morsa, do you want to round off in terms of your overall thoughts on this game before we move on to the next fixture?
Overall thoughts on the game? Arsenal have a lot to work on going forward. My only difficulty is I don't see how they're going to work on it with the current management they have. And the players that we're mentioning are in their cabinet, right? It's a team that looks promising for the future, but, their future may be in the Championship if things continue in this manner. And, that's my concern for Arsenal, because everybody would say, okay, they spend so much money. They have these type of players, which they spent with that money. It's very difficult for me to see them making a wholesale change to actually galvanize a performance. I mean, last season they did a lot better when they had kids like Smith Rowe, Saka coming into the fray, and they kind of saved the team from the dismay that we've seen so far this season. And if something doesn't change, I think it's going to continue in that trend. There's nobody to save the kids who were saving them last season.
Yeah.
I think the process, as Mesut Ozil said on Twitter after they lost 5-0. Trust the process with a broken heart.
Listen, I think we also need to give credit to Man City, ruthless. 100%, you know, scary, you know, what they can do going forward. You know, listen, they did play against a weakened Arsenal team. I think most of you had spoken about Arsenal in the previous week, but obviously they're probably at the lowest of the lows right now. But Man City really, you know, rolling up their sleeves and proving why they are definitely title contenders this season.
Let's
100%.
I guess quickly, just to answer what Pums is asking there, I think, Man City is definitely going to go in with one striker. But interesting enough, that striker is playing on the right-hand side in Gabriel Jesus, and Ferran Torres is playing through the middle. So it'll be quite interesting how they utilize Ferran Torres and Jesus, because it seems like they'll be the ones who often lead the line. And I think there's no youngster who can be a player to be knocking on the doors, but obviously they'll play like the Carabao Cup. But Jesus and Ferran Torres are looking good for them. They've got a couple of goals. And let's see what the season has.
But I think also what's nice for City is their front three generally are interchangeable. So, I mean, he doesn't need to play with a recognised number 9. He could play with three attacking players, if you want to call them that. And they can have sort of a free role playing along that line of the back four. So I don't think they'll have a problem, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're in a position where, you know, maybe it's only 2 or 3 points between them and another team, and they maybe, you know, lose 1 or 2 games to the Champions League or drop points. Maybe in January you might see them go and splash the cash on someone who is recognized. But I think right now, if I'm Pep, you know, they've proved that they can score goals. They scored 10 goals in 2 games. So you can't really complain.
No, you can't. But Nick, you're doing a lot of the talking, and you might as well keep talking, because the next game we want to talk about is your team's game. So let's hear that, man. The Newcastle 2, Southampton 2.
Last minute.
Tell us
last
how your heart penalty, broke.
Man. You guys are winning. You're winning, bro. You had it in your hands.
Just give it away, boy.
To be fair, we didn't deserve to win the game. I think it's typical Bruce. We sat in at home. You know, defended, had 30% possession.
Was the stadium fully packed? You had your 12th man there, so to speak.
No, so we had a full stadium last week, or the first game of the season. That was against West Ham. When we lost against Burnley last week, there was serious boos and an unhappy, you know, set of fans leaving that stadium, because they played against a Burnley side that had named 2 goalkeepers on the bench because they didn't have enough players to fill their squad. And we ended up going to penalties, lost the game. And I think it's just typical Newcastle, you know, like you play against a Burnley who, you know, we've probably tipped to get relegated, but then we end up just drawing the game and going to penalties and losing it. So this, we had a significant drop, I think 5,500 fans less than we did in our first game. You know, it's for us, it's not,
yeah, that is a lot.
You know, for us, it's just not, I can't comprehend when you have Miguel Almiron, Joe Willock, say Maximum and Wilson on the field, and we're sitting in. I don't understand it. Listen, we did break on the counter very well. And that's how we scored both of our goals. If you want to call it that, but we're not the strongest defensively, so I don't understand why he's trying to soak up so much pressure. But yeah, it was a rollercoaster of emotions. You know, the difference was the 2 players that I've spoken about, Maxi and Wilson. And yeah, right at the end, we throw it away because, you know, I 2 years ago, I said Jamal Lasalle should be going to the World Cup because he was in form. He was great. He was strong. And he's just gone backwards under Bruce. You know, he was a proper leader under Rafa Benitez, and he's slow. He doesn't make the right decisions. He dives in, you know, he doesn't have to dive in there. The goalkeeper's right on the back of the striker. The keeper actually saves it. So he doesn't even have to dive in. But yeah, you rewind a few sort of steps and ask why is he getting beyond him in the first place. I thought we were going to get our first win. But yeah, 1 point
it's
1 point more than Arsenal.
But it's a joke, Bru. Like for me, Southampton are so much weaker than they were last year from the players that they've lost, and we defended against him. You know, I just, it just shows you, and I think we'll talk about transfers later, but our team is inferior. We've signed Joe Willock, but Joe Willock was with us for the end of last season, for the second half of the season. We've let go of six players and signed a player that was already with us last season. And from what I understand, we've closed up shop this, that Mexican guy, don't get excited. He's going straight to the academy. So we inferior to what we were last season. And we finished.
You can't be signing a 19-year-old, obviously, it seems like he's got potential, you know. You need to be playing. You need to be having him as your second or third striker, striker, whatever.
Well,
it is.
From what I understand, is there's a few players that we're looking at, and we can't afford the loan fee. That's we spent all our money on Willock, the Premier League club. Ashley's not putting any more money into the club.
He's just taking all that money out.
Paul Jones for a loan fee of nothing, just pay half his wages.
Let's give Steve Bruce a call after this. We'll get him in time for the deadline. Do any of you want to comment on my team? Because I think you guys are like listening.
I'll just say, obviously I didn't watch the whole game, but obviously I watched bits and pieces. And I think you know it's great to see Wilson scoring the goals. You know, I think obviously it's the second goal of the season. St. Maximin also terrorizing there up front. He's a player that I have in my fantasy team because I know what he can do. He can create a moment of magic either by scoring or by creating. He just needs to stay fit. You know, I think that you guys have definitely got a player that could easily go for £40 million next season if he stays fit this whole season and has a full season. Could get about 15 goals and assists in total probably. But Wilson and say Maximin and Almiron, if you keep those three fit, should be okay. Even Golington contributed towards the second goal, you know.
Yeah, if you look at now, you speak about Wilson. From what I hear, the reports are that he's out for 4 weeks. We don't have a striker. We don't have a backup striker.
What do you think about Solomon Rondon getting called back up there to Everton?
absolutely breaks my heart. That guy is
He's going to Everton, boy.
It absolutely breaks my heart. He is an animal, that guy, bro. He is an animal. And the way we let him go, we didn't want to pay or give him a new contract. Ah, the club's a joke. But yeah, we're still here supporting them.
And like Pum says, Steve Loblock Bruce. I mean, he's just forgetting the pies in there. Steve Loblock Pie Bruce or Bruce Pies. Anyway.
I'm sure very excited to set that Loblock up against Ronaldo in the first inning.
Welcome back, Ronaldo, to the Premier League. Look at
Bruce, give it back.
How exciting.
Delicious. Delicious first game for Ronaldo. Okay, gents, we're going to move on to the Liverpool versus Chelsea, the 1-1. Mossa, you might as well open up here because
can I ask about the red card first, please? Can I just ask?
Which one?
It's unfortunate. The James is red card.
It is a red card.
It's unfortunate in my view. Look, it is a red card.
It's a penalty, but not a red card, guys.
Is a red card, unfortunately. It's a stopping opportunity for a team to score a goal. Like, I remember once a couple of years ago when Suarez was at the World Cup and Ghana was almost about to qualify to the quarterfinals. And
I think all remember that, bro.
Yeah, and Suarez put his hand out to make a save like a goalkeeper. And we felt hard done by it, the fact that the penalty was given.
This instance, it hit his thigh first and then hit the hand. So I'm saying, yes, the ball was going to go into the net without his arm being there. So
it's definitely a red card. The goal, it's a goal. And it's a goal scoring opportunity. Even though it was harsh, the rules state that he has to be...
There's rules, ne? But there's also things that make sense in football, guys. It's not like he did this. You know, something he was a goalkeeper like this, guys.
Yeah.
His hand was by his side, right? Yes, it did a natural motion to like twitch type of thing where you had all the ball into the back to like, and then
that's what killed him. That twitch killed him.
Yeah, that twitch killed him. It was the twitch.
But guys, yes, the twitch killed him. But the ball hit his thigh first. That's what killed him as well, is that the ball hit his thigh first. So that's the mitigating thing, I think, it should be the fact that the
look,
ball hit
the thigh. Whenever these decisions are given, I always look at it from a defender's perspective, because obviously that's the position that I was forced to play. Not by choice, clearly. But it was the position that I was forced to play. And when I always look at it, I mean, if it is coming off his leg, he's doing his best to stop it. And I do think the sending off is somewhat harsh. I understand it's part of the rules, as you say, Nick. But some of those rules, and I know it's the twitch of the arm that obvious, like in the end, that gets him sent off. But it is him trying to stop the ball, and it's just consequential. So I do think the red card should be given. And actually, I mean, the penalty should be given and the red card shouldn't be given. But what I don't like is as soon as the red card happens in a big game like this, we know what's going to happen. It's going to be one-sided. You know, we talk about when Burnley come to Liverpool and they sit deep. That's exactly what Chelsea did. The difference being Chelsea had better quality players. So it was a
much
better quality. So to break down a team that's going to defend for 90 minutes, yes, a lot of credit needs to be given to that side, but it's still going to be very, very difficult. And it killed the context.
It maybe from your perspective, it killed the context, but I think like if it had continued, it would have been a scarier contest for a Liverpool team that didn't create that many chances before that red card. It was you guys on the back foot for most of the first half. And had that not happened and we had continued to get our 11 players on the field, we were going to create a lot more opportunities. Even after losing James, we still managed to sit deep and soak up a lot of pressure and create more promising opportunities than what I think Liverpool did do in the second half, which is why I think the contest would have been more exciting from a Chelsea perspective if we hadn't lost the player and that incident didn't happen. It did happen. It was a red. I was super impressed by how professional these players are and how they take to their craft and their job, because I saw Lukaku literally sitting at the edge of the box, in between the box and the halfway line. I saw people holding positions, knowing that they could go for runs. And it was very impressive and very professional. I think it shows the character in the squad, and it shows, the qualities we have to work on this season.
Yeah. I mean, look, they were good. They were the better team up until that moment in time.
So do you think, Claudio, the fact that you guys obviously haven't made any signings, do you think that there could have been a player that could have added something, a spark, you know what I mean? I think in terms of the creativity, because, you know, obviously you guys have struggled with creativity in the last 12 months, you know, in this game similarly.
Yeah, I think he gets it wrong from his starting 11, firstly speaking. Just to kick that off, because I don't think Firmino should start. I think Firmino now, when he's coming off the bench, is giving us something different. We are quite a direct side. It's just how it is. Now, all of a sudden, you're starting with Firmino. You've lost that extra edge in the final third, where Jota doesn't have to be playing well, but he's going to get a goal, and he's got goals in him. So he's done that, and that I think that backfired completely. He starts Robertson. I know I said he should come in, but at the end of the day, you could see he wasn't fit. He gets taken off towards the end of the game anyway. So it was the sort of, you know, in the big games, there's always fine margins. That always gets said. And I think it was those decisions that obviously was the difference. And like I said, between Klopp and Tuchel, Tuchel's adaptable. He's a different type of manager where he plays for the result. No different to Mourinho, except for the fact that Tuchel isn't afraid of going forward. That's the difference. So, and I say Klopp's got that way of playing. He's got his belief and he believes in it. And his plan B isn't really there, except for the fact, one thing I've got to commend him is that at halftime he pulls off Firmino because it isn't working. And I think that changes the game a little bit. So yeah, Mosso, you say had the red card not happened, Chelsea would have been more expansive and come at Liverpool. But for me, that would have probably been a benefit, because as the game draws on and a crowd at Anfield, that space then opens behind, and where our Liverpool strength is the direct runs in behind, you know, and that would have been better for Liverpool. But at the end of the day, big questions again asked. So Celo, right question saying, do we need someone in the final third? Because we don't have, we go wide and then they panic and they want to go wide and just whip it in the box, but we have no movement in the box. There's nothing. And then it's exactly what we saw a lot of the time last season. So, you know, it is a bit of I wouldn't say it's a panic station, but it is a bit of a familiar pattern that we've seen before that does then all of a sudden go, Chelsea looks more of a title challenger than what Liverpool does at this stage. I mean, if we're looking at all the signings, Ronaldo coming in, we're looking at the Lukaku's coming in, Man City spending
Saul,
100 million on
Saul,
yeah,
coming
Saul's probably going to come into Chelsea. Yeah, so when you're looking at that, at the end of the day, you like Liverpool's focus, unfortunately, has been contract renewals, and that's where they're spending their money. That's been the difference. And we've just got to, you know, hope for the best and see what happens with the team and see that maybe the injured players that weren't available make the difference this season. That's all.
You,
I don't know.
You know, Coach, you talk about you guys going wide and the likes, and I always look at Liverpool, or recently I've started looking at Liverpool in a sense where the problem is sometimes those players that are going wide aren't the midfielders. It's the fullbacks.
It's not. 100%.
It's a hard job for them to actually do, you know, like week in, week out. It's quite, if you are prepared and do have a cover on your wide position, it's actually a little bit easier to manage those two wingbacks. They're not going to be able to run 90 minutes bombing up the line the whole day. Liverpool either have to be in full possession of the game or they have to figure out another approach. And that's what I think is beginning to show now for Klopp in terms of his staff personnel. It seems like too much width is coming from the back and it should be complemented by players either in the middle third or in the final third that also do that.
And you know what that stems from? That stems from them winning the league because of the fullbacks. So there's a lot of over-reliance and expectation that the fullbacks will keep delivering. That's the difference. Yeah. Whereas if you're looking at Man City, you've got these clever little players in the midfield that can make the movements out wide, but they can drift inside because they're technically gifted and they also know how to read their game that way. When you've got a player like Trent who's expected to do that, Trent's not going to take the ball, cut inside, you know, make a little 1-2 in the box because that's not his position. He's forced out wide. So as soon as he gets the ball, he looks up. What does he want to do? David Beckham-esque sort of cross every single time. And as a defender, and you're sitting deep, even Steve Bruce will tell his players, you know, that's easier to defend. No, but on a serious note, that's easier to take. Ah, it's easier to take care of. If you've got five players, and Chelsea, how did they set up? Three at the back, two full backs, five. You got five at any given moment. Plus, then everyone can. Ah, no. Anyway, same frustrations from my side. Chelsea looking
Shout
good. I will say this. Yeah.
Ripping over here. The best, boy. The best in the world. Not even the Premier League.
Listen to what Wong is saying there. There are no problems in Liverpool. Come support Arsenal. That's where the goal is from,
bro. Okay. Okay. Wonga, you know, don't want to take the abuse. Yeah.
Yeah, one thing I'd like to mention is the fact that that red card happened. It enabled us to make a change where we pulled Kante off. And I was super happy to see that happening because Kante was having a really satisfactory first half. And I don't think he was contributing very well to the momentum that we could have seen happening at Chelsea. I think similar to Firmino coming on for you guys, for me, it was potentially us bringing Kante in and not the most ideal setting because he was losing a lot of possession. He was caught in areas of the field where he shouldn't have been. And It was actually a blessing in disguise that we lost that man and he could critically then focus on Kante and get him out of the game.
Well, so I want to ask you, Elliot starting, obviously Thiago not fully fit yet, but he gets, you know, that's the confidence in a big game against Chelsea. Elliot starting ahead of Thiago at Anfield. What did you think of his performance as an outsider, as an opponent looking at the player?
Well, I look at the gesture from the manager first, right? The manager must know something that's happening at training that we don't know, in terms of what this boy is capable of, right? If he loves his technique, if he loves his movement and his energy, there's something there. I watched him when he did come on for the first two games, first as a sub and then starting. He was impressive both times. He actually didn't disappoint in any way. He did create a lot of movement around him, did find those pockets that you're speaking of where Firmino used to be, right? Firmino used to lie in between the pockets, between the defenders and the midfielders. And he was finding himself there a lot of the time. His confidence, he's confident on the ball. He gives you comfort enough to feel as if he's, you know, he's got pedigree in the English Premier League. He's been playing, rubbing shoulders with all the peers that he's currently playing with. So I think he's an excellent player in terms of what he's produced so far. To make the decision to go for Firmino and him is a little bit questionable in my view, but I can't fault him for giving a kid of this nature faith. It shows which school of thought Klopp comes from as well. You know, he's not, it's not new that he does this with the kids that he actually gives confidence to actually perform at the highest level, and it's quite exciting. He's a great player in my view.
Yeah, and it is something where Klopp tends to reap the benefits later down the line when players like this do get put in these sort of games. And also, if you have the talent, Flip, what a game to get thrown into. It's not like South Africa. No, he's young. Keep him until he's 25, and then we throw him into the big game. De Valier saying, you know, Elliot does have great vision. Shout out to him. He stays a couple of apartments down from my apartment. Shout out there. Selo and Nick, before we move on from the game, Chelsea here, and I think this is quite an obvious question, has an obvious answer to it, but Chelsea, definite title contenders?
Yeah, of course, yes. Of course, yes. Number one.
they have so much depth, and I think what's quite key for them is I think he's planned for both the European campaign as well as the English Premier League. You know, Chelsea tend to go and win European competitions when they've had an average season, so I think he would want to try and change that and challenge for
average
the Champions
by our
League.
Standards, Nick.
Nah, but let's be honest. When you've won European titles, you guys have been dead average. You had a good finish to the season last year. The last time you won the Champions League, you guys finished sixth or seventh.
Fifth or sixth.
Newcastle finished ahead of them. I remember that. 2013. You actually robbed Spurs of their spot. They finished fourth, and then you guys ended up taking it away. And then also you guys won, I think, the Europa League with Benitez. But I think there's some sort of stability now. I think there's a good energy from Chelsea, and yeah, just that it's like a steamroller at the moment. I mean, to hold the Liverpool out at home. Or at their home with 10 men, you know, that's a story in its own.
It was definitely 2 points lost for us and a point gained from Chelsea, especially how they behaved afterwards. You could see it meant a lot to them. What's up, Sam? Thank you for joining us yet again. Selo, Wolves, Man United, go away from home. They get their 3 points. Speak to us.
Can
we just talk about David De Gea safe? First and foremost.
Can we talk about how yours was in the red?
Can we talk about Mike Dean? I spoke before anyone else spoke. So you lost the chance. That's exactly what happened on the weekend.
You scored before anybody could have blown the whistle.
That kid at break who has a ball, and you're like, no, it's my ball, it's my game, I'm the boss.
Exactly. But I'll start about David De Gea's save, crazy save. I think obviously that gave us the momentum to at least try and get a victory. But yeah, I think obviously that challenge is one of those, man. If you're the team that makes the challenge, you look the other way and you think to yourself that it's a 50-50 challenge. But if you are a Wolves supporter or the other team, you think to yourself, hey man, Rafe, why didn't you see that? You know, the shin pad moved slightly. I think that.
Well, he literally didn't see it.
Yeah, no, listen. I think
he didn't and see it.
I think also the problem is that sometimes as well is that what happens after challenges is also something that plays into the ref's mind as well. You know, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to. It's not like he went to his mouth and then took it away. He looked at the situation. He felt there was minimal contact, right? From his, probably his angle, he doesn't see much contact. And then Neves looks at him and then says, and then falls down. You know what I mean? He's like, what's this guy trying to tell me? He's trying to tell me to rip the game. And then he lets obviously the game to play, and we score from that situation. And yeah, VAR. You know, I think they probably were backing the ref and saying that the ref was right there and saw what was going on and so on, you know. But I think, yeah, it's one of those literally, if you're the team that it goes for, you're happy. And then if you're the team that it goes against, you're really mad.
Listen, Selo, I was only pulling your leg. I fully agree with you. If you look at Neves, he looks at the ref, he looks at the ball, and he realizes he hasn't passed the ball to one of his players. So he says, yeah, let me just go down now. If he had passed the ball to one of his players, he was going to carry on running down.
Little red, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
so for me, I think that decision is fine because, you know, there's been many times in football, you guys have all played football, where you maybe make a challenge and you fly in, but you miss the ball completely and you miss the man completely, but you touch the guy. You will touch a guy and then the guy gets past you, he runs past you. You're not going to bring that back for a foul because there's an advantage there. I understand. But
there's two things to it, man.
Hold on, you can continue. I just want to say, is Bonga coming in here saying second greatest heist after Ramsdale to Arsenal for £25 million, and then he follows up by saying, so the ref is part of your team there, Sedor. Okay, as you were.
He's looking at the contact that there is.
But who's that ref? The ref that used to always give Man United decisions, the big policeman. What was his name?
Oh, jeez.
Howard Webb. Mike Dean's a new Howard Webb there.
You know what I hate about Mike Dean? He always wants to be the center of attraction, guys.
He
wants a statue outside Man United Stadium there next to Sir Alex.
We've seen a lot of goals this season being ruled out by VAR because I thought it was a rule that, you know, after a goal is scored, there has to be a check that takes place on VAR, on VAR. And in this instance, it was literally a moment which led to a goal and that check didn't take place. The contact was there, but they never felt it necessary for the referee to go check. So there was a rule being broken, but they never felt it necessary for anybody to take a call on it, which was quite surprising from my view. I understand when a player, when a referee has to award a play on decision. So the referee can make accounts for like that similar scenario. If the, Pogba had touched the player and the ball had gone to, one of his teammates, then the referee could say play on. He does make the field aware about a foul, but he does see that it's not going to harm anything in their favor. But to say that, look, there was contact. It could have been a foul. This foul actually led onto a goal being scored like two passes later. It feels like there are so many things that went wrong or somebody has paid really good money.
But Mosa, if you look at how close Mike Dean is to the action, you know, you can hear contact. Guys, we've all played football. You can hear contact. That's why I honestly think that was, you know, they'll go microscopically very close to the frame by frame to the incident. But that happened within a split second. I think that is just literally the boot brushing his leg and he takes two steps. The man takes two steps.
He does, but I
would personally think, in my mind, he's missed the player. He's just touched him. He's missed the player. He's gone past him.
If I was a player, I'd be more pissed off at the risk of me actually suffering a serious injury. It might have been a brush at my shin pads, but it's literally at my shin pads where I need to have these kind of devices. And then right after that, I feel that contact. I go down. I see two passes happening and it's a goal against my team. I'd feel really hard done by the referee. And if the ref had made the other decision to say, look, there was contact, you know, and it is a foul because of that contact. It was happening at the shin guards. Now, I don't think it would be a bad decision from the referee as well.
But Mosa, flip it now. What if he stays on his feet, he goes into the box and he helps him defend?
But he didn't.
And concede the goal. Yeah, but...
But he decided to go down.
I question his character. And mainly because he's Portuguese.
I was ready for that.
He didn't go down because of the contact. He went down because he lost the ball.
Yeah, but that kind of led to it, right? If you see studs coming up, sometimes people, they don't go into a header with their full force and lose the ball because they see studs coming to the face. We look at those kind of scenarios as, whoa, there's studs actually being up. Now we're looking at this to say they never got enough contact on him.
Pums' comment there is perfect. You know what I mean? There was no clear and obvious error. It's not clear and obvious. Because we are debating it, it's not clear and obvious.
All right. Well, let's move away from it not being clear and obvious. I want to ask you.
Tell us.
I think it's time. I don't. You know the Portuguese He's guy.
He's defending me, the Portuguese.
I thought you like hard stuff, hard fouls, and everything, man. What's happening?
Yeah, no, I do. I like giving them, and then when I see one of my players are down, I used to play soccer with Flace, and I know Flace. You know, it's nice to get the fouls on your side too. So it works both ways. But
what's happened with Wonga? He wrote the same thing four times.
He's driving a point home. He's making the point. He's not on the show, but the point is being heard louder than he's ever made a point ever before.
He should just say it one more time, and then it's the same scoreline that he got this weekend.
One more, boy.
Oh, man.
All right, but Tim, I want to ask you. So the clear and obvious thing, okay, forget about penalties, but Fred, how was his performance? Are you happy going into this transfer window without having this?
Clear and obvious as well, yeah.
Yo, bro, that guy is so
clear
bad,
and obviously.
Guys, very guys clear and obvious. Yo.
No, bro. You know, when you realize that Fred is so bad when Pogba is playing in the midfield with him and Pogba is telling him where to go. And telling him, because Pogba was literally telling him, go a bit closer to the center backs in between and go fetch the ball, basically. So he's trying to tell him that, no, if I fetch the ball, I'm too deep from the goals, obviously, because you want Pogba to be closer to the offense's goal than his own goals. So he tells Fred, hey, man, go fetch the ball. Like, go there.
No, he's got fear.
Fred doesn't go there. You know what I mean? And like, listen, like that is one thing. That we've been crying out for is a defensive mid who can play alone. You know, I think Fred definitely isn't the guy, and he looks lost without someone. There's the fifth one, 5 minutes.
Yeah, there's the it's the first point Arsenal make this whole season.
Five.
Hola, Bonga, you're doing your team proud, yeah, man. Better than they do on the on-field.
But yeah, Fred, that first 15, 20 minutes of Fred was poor, man. Traore goes right between him. Then there's a ball where we went for a corner. It goes to him. He has a bad first touch. It goes to Trincao. Trincao runs straight at him. He lets Trincao still go into the box. He could have tried and fouled him outside the box and maybe cause a free kick and have a yellow. But he still allows him to go past him into the box. Then he can't tackle him. And then he...
How can he foul him if he's weak?
Then Trincao shoots. And when he shoots, luckily, Wan-Bissaka is there with these long legs and stops it from going in. You know, so Fred... And again, Solskjaer didn't take him out. It means Solskjaer does not guys. Solskjaer shows you guys, man, that he's not the man. Like he tries to prove to the fans and to the hierarchy that I am not the man to take you guys forward because I cannot make tough decisions and I start players who play poorly. And then last week he played McTominay, but McTominay had an injury. He had surgery during the week. Yesterday he plays Dan James. He gets sold today. Like, bro, what's happening in your mind? Like,
okay,
can you
all right, Tilo, but let's not unpack him too
you
much.
See that frustration.
We're gonna be touching on this.
It's gonna boil.
No, you need to get it out. But what I'm saying is, I feel like this is going to spill over into the next section. But I do quick one, and I want you guys to make one. Just it's a quick one. You're not going to dive into it. Wonga's asking, who would you take, Shaka or Fred? And you're just going to say the name, Mossa.
Fuck. none of the above. Fuck them both. I'll go without a centre defensive midfielder. Yo, Shaka's gonna cost you so many times as well, though.
I'll go for Shaka, bro.
How many red cards has Shaka collected?
No, guys. At least Shaka has a first touch, guys.
For what? Yeah. Dude, he passes back 95% of the time.
We don't care.
Can I just say, winning you signed Fred? Am I right? Winning you signed Fred.
Yes.
And then he did try signing Shaka for Roma now. So I don't know what winning you were seeing in these two players here. But Nick, Shaka or Fred? Quick one.
So when you combine them, the word that sort of comes to mind is fucker. Like, I agree. I probably wouldn't have any of it.
Those fuckers.
Listen. But I think possibly Fred, but that's like tough. That's a tough one to say. Very, very tough.
I'll take Shaka because we say at least he's got a first touch. But listen, one thing
that Fred does. The man can't stay on the field. Dude.
I know.
The man boo him and then he swears at them.
Telling fans to fuck off.
Yeah, but hey, I think, Claudio, you must, no, don't want to continue.
No, what did you want to say? Go ahead.
Who would you take?
Who would I take? No, jeez. Yeah. Tough. No. I'm sharing the same sentiment as the rest of it. I can't have either, man. I'll go fetch a kid in the under-16s rather or something. We'll go fetch one next boy.
A kid that you can tell him to do one job. Just focus on the one job. But
Boom says he'll take Shaka. That's what he says.
Guys are brave. Yo.
All right, gents.
Silo, whole thing that's happening underneath it, where you have to vent to us, and I can see the boiling in your blood. I think it's going to be worse now that you've got the best talent in the world coming to your team. There's going to be more unforgiveness at your manager. Right now, you guys have been very forgiving of the manager saying whatever stories that you guys have.
But we're not forgiving of the guy, man. We've been harsh. We've been harsh on him and saying that he's.
Selo's been harsh. Selo hasn't. Bro.
Like at the end of the day, it's his tactics have been poor. Like we all know his tactics are poor. He doesn't bring on subs. He doesn't, like last week, Donnie doesn't come on when Fred and Matic aren't playing well. Like it's what I always say. It's vibes united, man. We just.
We might as well go there. Time. It's time.
It'd be
transfer
fair.
Deadline day. It's today. And we can argue, we can go blue in the face, between or red in the face, whichever team you support, who's been more successful in the transfer window. But the first one we might as well cover is this one. The Ronaldo to Man United.
The most exciting one I've seen in a long time. Wow-wee. To wake up or to consider him potentially going to Man City on Thursday and then finding that Manchester United would not have any of that. To have one of their former legends back in the field, and wearing the red is brilliant, right? It's stuff fairy tales are made of. I can only imagine what it's like for you, as a Manchester United fan, Silo, because from where I'm standing, this is a guy who I've seen create so many memories at that club and then go on to create them more. Throughout his entire career, he's literally seen as the greatest of all time in many people's views. And that's because of, his time there and at different clubs. So yeah, man, I am super, super impressed with this deal. His wages are, pricey, but they should be for his caliber. And I think he's cheap, man. They got him for 2 seasons. Yes, it wasn't a free like Thiago Silva and the likes at my club, but the caliber of this man is going to galvanize everybody at that club. And I think the person who's going to suffer the most at that club is an Ole, to be honest. This is going to put him more in the spotlight in terms of what he can do with players like this.
I was talking to a mate of mine on WhatsApp when obviously the deal was happening and other guys as well, is that the fact that, you know, this signing, it won't help Ole. I think, yes, people are all thinking about the fact that the goals will come and so on. Yes, he'll score goals. Cool. No problem. But then there's also the aspect of Solskjaer is very scared to make, certain decisions, you know. Bruno Fernandes never comes off, you know, unless we're winning 5-0, you know. But when we are struggling and Bruno's not having a good game, he never comes off. You know what I mean? So, so now you're going to have Cristiano Ronaldo not having a good game. He's not going to come off. Do you understand what I'm saying? You know, you're only going to try Cavani or try play Greenwood through the middle or try play Rashford or whoever might be the person to come on, you know. He's going to be scared to make the substitution because he never takes Bruno off when Bruno's not playing well, you know. So that is another headache that Solskjaer as inexperienced and with a coach with poor tactics doesn't really help him. But let's hope that in some way or form, I think that the players themselves can try and find a way to play together and then find the tactics amongst themselves. You know, there are sometimes where teams, where you can see the teams that the players are the ones who are bringing up the tactics.
Well, I think, I think that's going to happen. Yeah. I think Pums is saying, you know, he's going there to get his coaching badges. 100%. Ronaldo's not going to take shits. And if he sees the manager's not bold enough to make decisions, he will be making the decisions. But one thing I do want to say, and I raised this in the Euros, was there was a reason Bruno and Ronaldo didn't play together. Was because, you know, you're carrying two players when you're doing it. So it's going to be very, very interesting. Now you've got your McFred combo. We can see on the weekend dropped Pogba. No, I'm asking the question going, it's going to be very interesting to see how they're going to fit both these players in there. And, you know, they're both fantastic players and Ronaldo, no doubt. But will it be at the expense of a Bruno eventually? Like you're talking about pulling a player off.
I think the thing as well is that you need to remember that not all players had great Euros. I think Bruno was fatigued at the end of the season, and he just had no energy because even the Premier League performances they had dropped.
But I'm not criticizing his performance. I'm saying when I'm looking at how both the players are playing and how they play, they're not exactly. But Ronaldo now is not gonna. He's gonna work as hard as he can, but he's in and out the box. He's not gonna be pressed. Yeah, and Bruno doesn't do that either. So what I'm saying is there's going to be a lot more pressure on that midfield. And that's one. So if you did get your DM that you needed, you know, that probably would have been perfect. But now I'm just wondering. I'm asking, do you think they'll be able to cope?
But the thing is, Bruno does track back. I don't understand what you're saying. For Man United, he does track back. I don't know what games you watch.
Okay. All right.
I've seen Bruno run back and chase back players that go back into Man United's half and even to the box. I've seen him track back.
Does he
and
press? Maybe
he does press. Though. Bruno does press. You know what I mean? He does press. Bruno presses. The guys who press, the best press obviously at Man United is Fred, but Bruno does press as well. You know, I'd say he's a top five presser at Man United. You know, I'd say Fred and Lingard are the two best pressers at Man United. But Bruno's also top five at pressing in Man United.
Okay.
I think it's quite exciting to see how you guys are thinking those pairings could happen. I just wonder if Ole is going to have the balls to actually get one of those center defensive midfielders out, right? You don't need two right now. If you've got a Pogba, a Bruno, a Greenwood, a Ronaldo around that center defensive midfielder, I think it would be hampering their progression going forward if they were to have two of them. Yes, I've seen it happen with Chelsea, but Chelsea didn't have a out and out number nine, or we were kind of always looking for the counter, and that we could soak up a lot of pressure with those two center defensive midfielders. I don't know if it should be the approach that he takes, and I think a lot of criticism is going to come his way if he still has players like McFred running that part of the department when there are players like Cristiano, Bruno, Pogba that potentially have to sit bench to watch those start and play, which would be scary.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you are going to play with your strongest players in an offensive unit, so, I mean, what is your dream front three? Let me ask you that question first.
Hey, man, it's so tricky, man.
Just give me three names because I'm going to continue.
I'd go
Greenwood, Sancho, and Ronaldo as the front three,
and Fernandes behind them.
Yeah.
So if they're not going to work hard enough to defend, he's going to go with two because you can't just with one.
Greenwood and Sancho would be then to bring Pogba deeper.
But I think Pogba is better going forward than he is defensively.
Yeah. But definitely,
he's brilliant.
But the way
someone's going to eat. Someone's going to eat Ben.
The way to do it is to have a strong defensive midfielder who can play alone.
But you're not going to have one.
They're going to convert Fred into one.
Then what you must do, right, is play Pogba and Bruno as double eights, right, in front of the defensive mid, because that allows them to rotate going forward between the two of them. Because you need Pogba to be ahead of the defensive mid and not to play as a pivot. Because when Pogba plays as a pivot, you're putting him too far, and you need to just put him a little bit ahead of the defensive mid.
I agree 100% with you, but I don't think you've got enough. They don't have enough defensive attributes
to
do that. Yeah. Maybe not even the willingness. Maybe even it's the willingness. I don't think they are willing enough to do the dirty work, because they're going to give you all the dirty work going forward. But I don't see them, you know, Solskjaer saying to Fernandes, listen, you're going to double up as an eight, but that means every second time we go forward, you have to be helping Fred or whoever it is at the back there. Hmm. I don't know.
There has to be sacrifices for the balance of the team, because
Varane as a six.
Pogba's been the best player.
Bring Lindelof back. Bring Lindelof back and put Varane there.
Lindelof is better, actually. He could actually do a job there.
I don't know. That's a better point. Varane could do it.
You've got a solution. You've got a solution. Phil Jones. Give Phil Jones another chance here.
He's there. Man, imagine Phil Willy.
Jones. Phil Jones in behind to Ronaldo.
But I agree with what Sam says here. Obviously, I think Pogba being put back into the deeper didn't help us this game. The first two games, at least he was the best player on the park, and obviously he was connected with Bruno.
So the manager, let's talk about what will happen. Not in an ideal world. In an ideal world, we would have that scenario.
Matic and Fred. He'll play Matic and Matic or Fred with Pogba deep, and then Bruno as a 10, and then he'll play Sancho on the left, and then Bruno on the right, and Ronaldo up through the middle. That's what he'll do. And then Martial will come on for whoever is not playing well up there as the bench option.
And Rashford
when he's back, because Rashford only started training this week from his injury.
Sort of outlier solution. You know, Pep did this with, who was it? Philip Lahm. He moved fullback into midfield. Do you not think Luke Shaw could do that role and sit there?
I don't know how comfortable he is.
I don't know defensively.
I think he's very
comfortable. I think he's good on the ball. I don't think defensively, I think you're going to have the same issue. I don't think defending is Luke Shaw's strength. Like, I think he's better going forward than he is defending, personally speaking.
Defending is good at, he's good at recoveries because of his pace. He's good at recoveries. But yeah, it is an interesting one. I'm trying to think of the defenders that we have, I think Lindelof is the one who could be a defensive mid. Just because he can actually hold the ball and pass it. But hey, man, I don't know, guys. It's a tough one. I think even myself, guys, I'm about to pack my bags and go to the UK, guys. I'm going to find out for 10 days. In my some of my footballing days, I have been called a bit of a Vieira, a bit of a Torre. This is because of my passing range, but maybe I can go fill in there.
Sure, Jason called it on the show a few weeks ago, but Ndidi, I think, would have been a nice addition to that.
Perfect,
brilliant addition. Yeah.
Perfect.
Then they would have figured out their spine. That spine easily would be sorted for. Mm. Yeah.
That's my team. There's nothing else happening on my team. But Claudio,
were you happy to see Varane?
No, definitely. I think he played so well on Sunday. He only made one mistake in the game. Played very well, very assured. People say that he will take time to adjust to the Premier League, but he did very well. He handled the pressure very well, made some last-ditch tackles, last-ditch clearances as well, and was strong in the air against Jimenez. So I think we've got a great signing there, a leader as well. So Champions League Varane, man, can't wait.
Hey, Brad, Tlhompho Kakana has just been sidelined from Sundowns. Maybe you can sign him there. Maybe Champions League winner?
Yeah, that's actually a good player. But
Tlhompho can pass the ball, bro.
He can spread the thing, boy.
Claudia, I wanted to ask, man, your club did this sneaky tactic today, bruh, of announcing the club captain's contract extension on deadline day, trying to focus some good news on the fact that your club captain is renewing when there should actually be saying that they're trying to sign someone and the extension should be announced maybe tomorrow, 2 days' time. They're trying to, divert their attention.
Divert attention, yeah.
Yeah, look, like I said, if Matt was here, he'd have a comment about this. I think the average, I would like to think anyway, the average Liverpool fan is an educated Liverpool fan with their club. So they're aware of what's happening behind the scenes and how they operate. So, like I said, the focus for Liverpool would be, you know, the contract renewals of key players. I mean, started the window, he was being linked with PSG because there were stalls in his contract renewals. So the fact they've gotten an over the line. Look, are they pulling a fast one over us, trying to make us feel better when United have just signed Ronaldo? I don't think so. It could just be like, yeah, our captain's sticking with us, which is, it's a nice sentiment, I think, for the rest of the squad more than it is for the fans. But we're under no illusions. We know exactly what's going on at the club, and we're just going to sit tight, support the club, and hope for the best. But gentlemen, from a transfer window perspective and Ronaldo moving to United, in terms of their competitiveness and title challenging credentials, and a quick one, Mosa, do you think they can do it?
They've got a 20 goals per season type of player. Of course they can fight now. They can definitely fight for it.
Nick, do you believe they can do it?
Sorry, my battery's dying, yeah. Yes, I do think they'll be there and thereabouts. I do think that sixth position is going to be a problem for them.
Celo?
They'll be there.
Yeah, man, come on. What else, man, guys? Okay. We've got Cristiano Ronaldo, guys. I think that in itself is a player that definitely helps us. You know, I think with the goal scoring, I think goals shouldn't be our issue this season. The issue should be, can we control midfields? Can we challenge against the other top teams? You know, there'll be a tough game where we are playing against a Chelsea, a City, a Liverpool, and a Spurs or whatever.
Newcastle.
You know, and even in Newcastle, I mean, you know, Stevie Bruce taking out the pies. You know what I mean? You know, it's a tough game. You know? So we need to be able to match them in the midfield firstly, and then also the little opportunities that you do get. I think our front line can definitely take those opportunities. But the question is, can you shut them out at the back and defend when they've got chances?
Right. But you guys have a lot more confidence, right?
Yeah, no, definitely.
You've got a Varane in that back four. You've got Cristiano up front. It's very 100%. Scary when competitors look at you.
100%. And I think I also like the fact that what Pogba's been saying in the media in terms of, you know, saying that we need to be challenging for the season, doesn't care about records. He only cares about titles. You know, I think the right messages are coming from him, you know. I think he definitely wants to give it his all this season for Man United to win a title. And I think he feels that he's got a shot to win the title with Man United this season because of the players that they have.
Mm. Right, gentlemen.
So, Claudio, just quickly, the segment was transfer deadline day, but we were speaking about a transfer that went over the line about a week ago. So are we going to actually talk about the deadline day transfers or what? I'd like to speak about what deadline day is for Newcastle fans. So transfer deadline day is a thing, but for Newcastle fans, it's just a Tuesday.
It's just day.
Just an ordinary Tuesday.
It's just a Tuesday.
Just right. A Tuesday. On this fine average Tuesday for all the Newcastle fans, before we end the show, who do you think is going to be the player in this transfer window that has the biggest impact? I know we've covered a lot about Ronaldo, but is there another player that's moved so far in the Premier League that is going to be the difference for their side?
Lukaku.
I definitely agree with you guys now after
watching it. He's back, he's looking
at him. Chelsea fan. That is a Chelsea fan at its finest, ladies and gentlemen. Look at that. Switches sides, left, right, and center. Doesn't need much convincing. Says one thing, then turns the cheek and says the other thing. Quick to convince.
He's getting a tattoo.
It's going to come on. Ach, man, it's just, I think what I underestimated was the amount of learnings that he's had over his past couple of seasons at the new clubs that he's had in Italy. And it's starting to show the discipline that he seems to have. Be it clear that it was against an Arsenal team, which was punished 5-0 against this weekend. And it was a job where he had to defend, but the job that he did very well and very, very disciplined. And still think he's not worth that amount of money, but he will create a lot of impact for Chelsea because we never had that number nine. And now we can actually look towards him whenever we look up, right? It gives confidence to all the players around the back and the midfield to know that they can give a ball to a number nine who they'll probably get the ball back from, which is something we've sorely missed with the likes of Werner and the likes there.
And Musa, are you happy with the Saul deal? Because obviously it's Fabrizio Romano said, here we go. So it's a 5 million euro loan. Obviously, it'll add to midfield.
Yeah, it'll beefen up our midfield. It'll give us, as Claude was mentioning earlier, you know, to have a coach. I mean, Nick was mentioning earlier about Tuchel and the management at the club at the moment. I think this time, if we want to go and do well in either competition, be it the Euros, Champions League, or the Premier League, we'll have enough legs under us to carry us the whole way.
Even went sideways.
Gents, Mbappe, it's come out saying Mbappe will join Real for free next season. I don't know what the thoughts are there,
but that's great.
Last one.
That's great business. It shows that there was just big dick energy from both teams saying that they won't buckle to each other's pressures, because obviously one wants to say we're only going to pay 160, the other one says you must pay 200 and so on. You know, I think at the end of the day, Real Madrid will definitely get a steal. You know, Mbappe for free next season. That's crazy, guys. After getting Kamavinga for £30 million is actually great business for Madrid. And I think they're in a position, they're looking good definitely for next season.
Do failed transfers of that nature highlight how overpriced these lads are becoming very, very quickly? I think he's one case, and then you see a Harry Kane. I do know these lads have a lot in terms of what they can contribute when they join a team, but the prices are just becoming like they're literally going out of this world. And I think it's starting to show now, because these are still talented people who can do a lot of work, still very young, but I think the prices are just, they're just overinflated in my view.
Yeah, thank all the foreign oil money thrown into the game that helped the inflation and obviously build what we are seeing now. Mosa looking more like a Man United fan, according to Sam, with that background. All right, gentlemen, final thoughts before we end.
It's just for this lad. It's just for this lad. It's just for this lad.
So my final thoughts quickly. I see Pums had asked me about Choudhury from Leicester. We were set to sign him on loan. From what I understand, at 3 o'clock this afternoon, we were told that we're not going to do any more business. The deal had fallen through. We weren't willing to pay X amount of his wages. I'm not too sure what that was. They wanted
a high percentage. Normal Tuesday. That's
yeah. But then when I actually got back in the car, I just quickly checked Twitter, and apparently there's two loan deals that may go through this evening.
Is Phil Jones one of them?
No, the other one is a guy from Marseille, Kamara. I don't know if you guys.
Oh, Kamara. But apparently, Wolves also want him. So that's a difficult one, because he's a defensive midfielder. He's got 1 year left on his contract at Marseille. I think you and Wolves are in the running for him, because Wolves pulled out of Renato Sanchez's deal.
Yeah, bro. Obviously, you'd want to come work under Steve Bruce. Like, it's a given he's coming, bro. So, take it easy, bro. Give me something.
How exciting. How exciting.
I want to find something. Wait, but continue. I want to find something.
Right. What's the final thoughts from your end before Seth finds something?
Final thoughts. You know, I'm actually scared of sounding any more like a Man United supporter in this show. I know I have Cristiano over here. I think that signing, all in its all, it's a beautiful thing for me personally to watch somebody with his pedigree and his history coming back to the club that started the entire life of for us as fans. I'm also very excited to see players like Varane joining a Man United, because that's going to change the picture quite drastically, right? Like before, we had Maguire, who kind of always knew he had his position set, and there was nobody actually with more authority and more seniority in that defense. And now seeing a Varane come in there is also going to make his performance have to improve. And that's gonna galvanize the entire squad. I think the business at Man United have done this transfer window is excellent. To let go of James, yes, he's a good talent, but to get a Cristiano and to replace him with the Cristianos, very, very nice. To have Greenwood firing on all cylinders, playing next to a Cristiano is very exciting. The only player that I'd say probably going to be a problem in the change room would be a Martial, in my view, because he's not going to take sitting on the bench lightly. Whereas a Lingard, he'd still be excited to be working with the likes of Cristiano and learning from his pedigree.
He just wants to go.
It's vibes. So I think, all in all, from my side, I'm actually scared of Man United. I had written them off to probably do worse this season compared to last season. But with the signings and the business they've done.
Ole.
And I think he needs to go out quickly so that you guys can get a good manager. And you might think I'm crazy for that, but you know, the same thing that happened with Chelsea last season. It was a big spend, a lot of quality players in the cabinet, but the manager wasn't getting it right. And when that change happened, we literally became Champions League winners. And that's something I'd suggest you guys look at.
Nice. I couldn't agree more, but this is for my boy Nick.
The tune. What is that? It's where the Chargers live. Where's the Jordy? Someone that lives in the tune.
Santiago Munoz.
Where the Jordys live? Huh?
What's the Jordy? What's the tune? It's where all the Jordys live.
That movie's legendary. They're saying they want to try and find Gavin Harris and see if they can get him out of retirement to come and play.
My last thing is just, yeah, man, I'm excited for the season ahead, guys. All the guys with fantasy football, Cristiano Ronaldo's £12.5 million if you want to bring him into your side. Throw in those wild cards. Have Lukaku, have Ronaldo up front. You'll definitely have lots of goals up front there.
Yep, and on that note, get your points, get scored. And if you haven't joined the Goal Lounge League yet, don't forget to do that. Also, if you haven't joined our Discord channel, the link is in the bottom. And also, if you want to buy the T-shirts, there are three things to remember. It's not that hard. Don't be silly. Just join us. I mean, it's fun. Celo has a lot of... Also, wait, I was going to say, Celo has good facts. Morsa comes up with false facts. So don't read anything he puts out
there. I've got all the great facts, man.
Watch out for that. And then remember, gentlemen, it is a Tuesday. So if you don't know what to be
cool.
Be cool. Yeah.